Hello and welcome to another edition of Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This show is brought to you by Audio Journal and sponsored by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. Opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and or opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. The goal of our program is to offer insight into the beautiful and creative minds of all types of artistic people right here in the New England area. If you're a regular listener to Beautiful Minds, then you'll recall that last time I interviewed my friend John Dage. John wrote a book about his experiences climbing Mount Everest, as well as being a police officer and surviving many battles with cancer. Let's listen to part two of John Dage.
When we began talking at the very beginning here, I held up this, which is your book.
Oh, yeah.
And I had it upside down.
Yes.
Because you're standing on your head on the cover, and it's called Beyond Survival, What Comes After the Fight, Choosing to Thrive by Sergeant Jonathan Dage. You want to talk about this book that you wrote?
So usually at this point in the story, everyone's like, so are you cancer-free? And I'm like, well, I was for 7 years. So I ended up getting on the SWAT team, getting on as a sniper, did a bunch of cool stuff for the police department. And then 3 years ago, I went to the sniper range. We were waiting for the gates to open. And I get a call from my doctor, like, hey, your white blood cell count is high.
Mm.
I'm like, all right, what's high? He goes, well, it should be 5 or 6,000. You're at like 80,000. Mm. He's like, you have leukemia. So I had to do a bone marrow biopsy. He said, all right, now you have CML, chronic myeloid or chronic myelogenic leukemia. Super rare, super treatable. I'm like, yeah, of course, right up my alley. And I was taking daily chemo pills, and it was causing leg pain and issues. And it was also causing, during stress, I'd have low oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, you're running at 100% oxygen saturation if you put one of those things on your finger.
Yeah.
And I was working out, and I'm like, man, I just don't feel good. Like, this is something's off.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the hospital. I did a stress test. And they said, oh, we need you to walk up and down the hallway for a stress test. And I said, could I run the stairs instead? Because that walking isn't going to get my O2 levels down.
Yeah.
So they found a nurse who was going to run with me. So I ran up and down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And my O2 levels were 87.
Yeah.
And they were like, that is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not getting the oxygen, that means your organs aren't getting that oxygen. And they're going to shut down and you could pass out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bad things. So then I was out of work, in limbo for a while. And my wife travels for work, and she came home one day, and I was on my laptop, which I'm never on. And she goes, what are you doing? And I said, I'm writing a book. And she said, you don't read books. And I'm like, and throughout this whole time that I shared my story, everyone's always told me, you should write a book. You should write a book. And
yeah.
I'm like, I don't like sitting in front of computers. Like, it's not my thing. But over the years of doing the nonprofit and sharing my story and helping people, I've realized sharing my story helps people either because I've had chemo, surgeries, radiation, brain surgeries, all this stuff. And that's beneficial to somebody who's never had it.
Mm-hmm.
Or sharing my story is going to help them be seen early, which is going to be, I'm going to say, more preventable, you know, down the road with cancers. So I promote like be your own advocate. Like, you know your body.
Yeah.
Typically, you know, I've stayed active your whole life, and you know what it's like when you get a cold. Pretty much that cold shouldn't last more than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you pull a muscle, that shouldn't last for more than 2 or 3 weeks. So like mark in your calendar, hey, something feels weird, mark it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that day comes and you're like, oh yeah, this is still feeling funky, like I should get checked out.
Yeah.
Not saying it's going to be cancer, but it could be something else that should be checked out rather than coughing up blood for a week and waiting to go to the doctors. Or another warning sign for me was I felt mildly ill for like 2 months.
Yeah.
But it was winter in New England.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it sucks. The weather sucks. It's cold. You know, you don't feel right. And you just, people don't want to hear that they're sick. So you justify not being sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to the doctor, they only give you 10 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
So you want to know that you're not sick and you want to walk out of there saying, oh, no, it's just this. But what I'm trying to push is telling your doctor, like, you know your body better than the doctor knows your body. Where, like, I've been taking these CML pills. I'm on my fourth generation of pill, meaning I took the first one, I took the second one, I took the third one. Now I'm on the fourth. And I've had a lot of leg pain throughout. My bones got thicker. They were starting to fracture. And my oncologist disagreed that it was due to the meds. But in the meds, it said there's a 20% chance that it causes hyperostosis, you know, bone pain and all this stuff. But I'm like, I know my body. Like, I'm the one that wakes up in pain every night.
Right.
So I'm going to push for myself to try a new medication. Yeah, I forgot where I was going with that. But I think with the book, it was me sharing my story, one, for my kids. I have two stepkids, 11 and 14. And I wanted them to know my story in case, you know, the worst.
Yeah.
And I think it's helped people along the way of, I mean, I talk about a little bit of Iraq, some funny police stuff, and then the mindset I had through it. Like, I stayed pretty positive throughout my diagnosis.
Yeah, you sure did.
And I don't know how I did. I think because there was always a treatment option. Whereas if they told me, hey, get your affairs in order, yeah, I don't know how I would have felt.
Yeah.
I probably would have been a little more upset about life and poor me and all that. But that's what I'm doing now, is I've been doing some public speaking, and I'm trying to push that, for the reason being of, you know, you're going to have obstacles in front of you.
Right.
Everyone has obstacles, whether it's a speed bump or a mountain. You can't get caught in your heels and say, poor me, because that obstacle is going to consume you.
Right.
You just need to take the first step, and then take the second step, and then take a third step. I mean, I've been, I think I've had cancer for 8 years that I know about, that I've been battling off and on. And it's, you know, that's a long, slow battle. That's me trying to work out every day because, one, because I can, and two, because I feel better when I do, and it helps your mental health, it helps your immune health.
Yeah.
And, you know, all that stuff that comes with it, I try to do incremental things of these, like, small wins every day.
Yeah.
And I could feel, like, I stopped drinking, I could feel bad for myself and be like, you know what, it doesn't matter what I do, I could drink, you know, three old fashions every night just so I could go to bed and sleep. But the reality is, you know, with all the information out there now, it's so easy to pick something and run with it. And, and I've been picking with, like, let's do the healthy option.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
And I've, with the book, it was pretty cool. One of the first books I've sold, it's on Amazon, and it's on Resilience Talks is the name of the LLC I started. So you could buy the book there too. But somebody bought it on Amazon, and he's a retired New Jersey cop. And he emailed me because on thinblueride.org, I have my email and phone number just so people could, whatever, reach out. He was having a hard time with his diagnosis. So I was like, all right, let's, you know, I'll call you tomorrow. I talked to him for like an hour and a half on the phone, and he just had a hard time getting out of his head a little bit. Like, well, I'd travel, but what if I get sick? And then I tell him, well, like, do you get sick? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, wouldn't you rather be sick in, you know, the Caribbean, if you want to go to the Caribbean, than be sick in New Jersey in the winter or something?
No, I'm one like, wants to be sick in New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. But my thing was like I get hydration every month. Like, I get IV bags maybe once a month, every other month, for immune health, because it boosts your immune health, because I'm immune compromised.
Yeah,
I do red light therapy. I do sauna and cold plunge, because when you do contrast therapy, that massages your lymphatic system, which gets rid of all the toxins. So it's like I'm doing every little thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let my diagnosis or my cancer determine what I'm doing and not doing.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. Well, so I gave him my, you know, hour and a half over the phone. A week later, he sends me a picture. He highlighted stuff in my book, and I'm like, oh, that's wild. I'm like, I don't feel like an author. Just because you write one book doesn't make you an author. But he was like,
kind of does.
But yeah. But he was like highlighting stuff, and then he sent me a picture. He like went on a bicycle ride. I'm like, that's
awesome.
And then a week later, he sent me a picture like he went on his motorcycle. Like, I think he was just nervous to get injured or get sick or just like get his head around it.
Right.
And then I'm like, I helped them, you know, unlock whatever was locked up and make a difference.
Let's talk about this book a little bit. We have been talking about it, but let's talk about the cover. There's a photograph of you standing on your head.
Yep.
And it appears that you're in the mountains somewhere. What mountains exactly? It's certainly not Mount Washington or Mount Wachusett.
So funny story behind that. My buddy Paul Sear on the SWAT team, me and him were partner snipers for working pairs. And he goes, yeah, me and Chase are going to do the Mount Everest base camp trek. So I was like, oh, sweet. I was like, I want to go because we have a team member, and his last name is Chase, on the SWAT team, who's our team leader. So I see Chase a week later in the SWAT room, and I said, hey, you ready to go to Everest? He's like, I'm not going to Everest. So then I realized Paul was talking about his son, whose first name is Chase.
I see.
So I invited myself on a father and son trip to Everest Base Camp. And, well, Chase said yes, thankfully. So then me and Paul flew to where he was because he's in the military, flew to, like, Minnesota or something. Then we flew to Canada. Then we flew to China. Then we flew to Nepal. And a couple of days in Nepal. And that is one of my favorite cities. It's very third world, dusty, dirty. There's like live wires everywhere. Nobody's beeping. Nobody's yelling. Like, there's so much people, but it's such
too busy
like a
being
chill.
Electrocuted.
Yeah, exactly. But like the people there are just so relaxed. Like, nothing bothers them.
Yeah, sure.
And we were in a touristy section, which was pretty cool. It just shops. And, you know, I bought a fake North Face bag for like $12 that I still have. I'm like, hey, if it lasts the trek, then sweet. And I'm not one to travel and buy souvenirs, but this is the place to buy souvenirs. Like, everything's cheap. You could buy the prayer flags, like the colored flags that people put on the mountains, the singing bowls, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we flew to one of, if not the most dangerous airport in the world. So it's called Lukla Airport, and it's in the side of a mountain. And if it's too foggy, they don't fly.
Mm-hmm.
So basically these pilots, like very good pilots, they kind of have this ritual of, our guys were like having tea, two pilots having tea, and the stewardess like kind of tending to them on the tarmac. And then we're on our bus waiting to get on. It reminded me of the military, of like being on the airfield. The airplane was one row of people on the left, one row of people on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Stewardess would walk back with a basket of cotton balls for your ears and like a little piece of candy. Like, I'm like, all right, this might be my last meal. And these pilots follow each other in, and it's a mountain cliff. So if they're short, they hit a wall. And then the runway slightly goes uphill to slow them down.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the runway, there's a mountain wall. So, like, you need to hit this runway perfect.
It's like landing on an aircraft carrier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're, like, you're jockeying for position, and people are trying to get on the flights. And if you're not on the flights before it gets foggy, then you have to wait a day or 2 days to fly.
Wow.
So we were, like, one of the last flights, and we met our guide in Lukla. So all these other guides were there with their people, like jockeying for position. So we flew to Lukla, met our guy. Then everyone kind of stays in that little town, village.
Yeah.
And the only way to get from village to village to Everest and everything is just a path. They have yaks, they have some donkeys, and it's people, and that's it. There's no tractors, there's no nothing.
Right.
So instead of staying in the village, we like had some tea, had some lunch, and we walked 3 miles to another village because our guide said in the morning, everybody's going to be on this trail. So let's beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was typically like the days we did a 2 week trek. So basically it was Lukla. And then we did a counterclockwise trip, 6 days to base camp. Then we went through these passes up in the mountains, got a good view, and then made our way back. But on day two, it was like an 8 hour trek.
Yeah.
And we went from, I think, up to 11,000 feet at the Namche Bazaar, which is a big village. It's not the biggest village at that elevation, but it's like one of the bigger ones.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular. And I was so sick.
Really?
Altitude sickness. Yeah. So basically, we did a cheap trip. Like, we were just let's fly there cheap. I think we paid $3,000. It was $1,500 for the flight, $1,500 for the trek.
Wow.
And we had two porters that carried our bags.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of sounds like a jerk move to have somebody carry your bags. Mm-hmm. But when you're not living at elevation,
yeah,
you know, 40, 50 pounds on your back is feels like 2 tons.
Yeah.
So I had a backpack, a day pack. I had water in it. We had to filter our water every day. I was taking vitamins. I had extra cold weather gear.
Mm-hmm.
And we went the end of the trekking season, which was Halloween. And then I remember we were flying home like around Veterans Day.
Yeah.
But there was still a lot of people on the trails. And we were moving quick. And we were actually keeping up with our porters. And they didn't like that. Like, these guys are smoking butts. And they're like, wait, look at these tourists keeping up with us. So
they're at 12,000 feet ripping butts.
Oh, yeah. It's insane. And so I was pushing myself to keep up with Paul. Paul's a physical specimen. He has his own CrossFit gym. And his son's, you know, younger. And here I am with half my lungs missing.
Right.
Trying to keep up. So when I was at this village, it's like a tea house, kind of like a hostel. You have a common room. And they burn yak shit. So that, there's no wood up there. So
okay, yeah.
The yaks go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Then they lay out the dung, they let it dry, and that's what they burn.
Wow.
So the common area is where you get your heat. And then you go into your room, which is freezing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get in your sleeping bag, sleep, then you wake up, and then go trek again.
Wow.
So, and it was very, you know, you're going to the bathroom in buckets in their, you know, bathroom.
Yeah.
And
how cold is it?
Not too cold. Like, I wore lightweight Salomon boots because I wanted light feet.
Mm-hmm.
I wore like these cool pants, kind of like a hiking pant.
Yeah.
I bought smart wool underwear, smart wool long sleeve.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
This episode has been brought to you by
smart wool. I wanted to make sure, like, you don't want to wear cotton. You don't want to wear something where the sweat is going to soak to it because then if you're sweating and then you stop, that freezes.
Yeah.
And then you get hypothermic, which is the number one cause of death out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I'm going to spend the money on this smart wool. So I bought a smart wool. Then I bought an Arc'teryx jacket, like a shell.
Yeah.
Keeps the heat in. And I would have a down jacket, but because we're walking, I didn't want to sweat, so I would always take that off.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be cold enough in the morning where I would need, you know, maybe a base layer, maybe the smart wool, the down jacket, and then the Arc'teryx jacket.
Yeah.
And then
when you're sitting around, you want to buckle up, and then when you get moving.
Extra mittens in my bag that I didn't put on too much. I had light gloves in my bag. And I'm an Army guy, so I'm having gear in my bag.
Yeah.
Like med kit. Like me and Paul were on a flight. I go, hey, I got a tourniquet in my bottom of my bag, like telling him, hey, if this plane goes down, like we need to know what we're doing. So,
and I'm going
to
eat you first.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I feel like it was light. And then towards Everest, I remember having to like rent a heavy down jacket and like the thick winter gloves.
Yeah.
And, but back to the second day, I get so sick. I'm like, I'm going to have to go home early. I told people I was hiking to Everest and I'm not going to make it. Like, I was in my head wrapped in my sleeping bag. Like, this is not good.
Yeah.
Slept it off, took some Tylenol, went down and had some Dalbot, which is like a local, everything's vegetarian because there's no refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to eat meat because you'll get sick.
Yeah.
So Dalbot is like bread, kind of a pea soup, rice and some other, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I ate that. I felt like $1 million. And I said, all right, I know this is a group trek, but I'm going to do this for myself.
Yeah.
Not for those guys and try to keep up.
Yeah.
So then I put my headphones in. And I would walk my own pace, and these guys would be ahead of me, and it's not like you could get lost, really.
Yeah.
You know, they'd go up a half mile ahead. They'd kind of wait, and then I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm good. And like, just keep going. Then we'd hit another village. And then on the cover, I remember I had a headache. This was after the day I felt like crap.
Mm-hmm.
I felt better, but I had that lingering headache, and we're probably at 12,000 feet above sea level. And I'm like, let me do a headstand and see if this makes my headache go away.
And did it?
No, but, you know, at least I got a cool picture of the Himalayas in the background. Right. And then, but it's funny because when I wanted a cover for the book, I went through so many pictures, and there's so many pictures of the arms crossed, like the profile picture. I'm like, and I remember going to Barnes and Nobles and I'm looking at book covers and I'm like, these all look, there's nothing that, some that stand out.
Yeah.
But I go, I want that to be the cover because you're looking at it and I'm inverted. And actually the publishing company said they couldn't do it because it was too pixelated because I did everything on my phone.
Mm.
And I hired a media guy, Killer Ball Media, who's local, and he made it. I go, I don't care if it's grainy a little bit. Like, I just want to be able to use a picture.
Yeah.
So he made it. So he made designed the cover.
Yeah.
And, you know, super happy with how it came out.
He did a great job. It's and it does draw you in immediately. I mean, I keep wanting to to flip it over so I can see, you know, but it's fantastic. I remember your trek and you were on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was in almost real time that you were sending
Because I have, you could pay for Wi-Fi. And
some sort of satellite connection or something. Yeah. There's a photo of you, well, there's probably a few, but, and the sky behind you looked like it was on fire.
Oh, yeah. The sun was setting that night.
That was, and you're sort of on this plateau with the mountains and then the, I mean, and I just, you know, every one of us has our own life to live and our own cross to bear, if you will.
Yeah.
But it was just so inspiring for me to see that and think, like, what are you complaining about?
Yeah.
You know, like, this guy is missing half of his lungs, basically. He's climbing Mount Everest, and you're upset because, you know, they gave you a cruiser that's got 20,000 miles on it. You know what I mean? Like, it really does give you a little perspective, and I haven't really seen you in a long time, but I wanted to tell you how much I appreciate
That's awesome. Thanks.
The perspective that you gave me. It really did inspire me. I was going through my own stuff, you know, and I'd see you and I'd be like, you cannot ever quit or give up or cry about stuff.
Yeah.
And know JD, like you can't, you know, you've been through a lot and you're so upbeat and so positive, and it's inspiring to a lot of people. And I read this book, and I cried a couple times, and I laughed a bit because of the stories in here, the police stories. I'm like, you know. And you even were kind enough to mention your Uncle Robin and me, the drunken uncles.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you guys have been a part of the nonprofit stuff, like with us throughout the way.
Yeah.
I remember that fire sunset, too, in our – it was very foggy, and our guide was, we got to this place and I was gassed. So actually we made it to base camp and they had to life flight, Chase out because he got sick. He got altitude sickness so bad that to fly him to, Kathmandu. So then it was me and Paul, the guide and a porter. And then I'm like, man, I kind of wish they could just say like, let's go back with him.
Mm.
And they're like, no, we're going to keep going. I'm like, damn. Okay. And it was very surreal. The mountains are amazing. Like from the bottom to the peak is just like sheer cliffs and turquoise glacial lakes. And when we got to one of those camps, we put our stuff down and he goes, hey, let's go watch the sunset. And you couldn't see your hand. Like you could see your hand in front of you. It was so foggy, but that was it. And I'm like, we're hiking up this hill. I go, this is stupid. I just want to chill out. We've been hiking all day. And then the clouds opened up. And it was wild because it was us on this hillside. And I remember looking probably a mile away. And I saw this other group on a ridgeline, like ants.
Yeah.
And we're all watching this amazing sunset. And I'm like, I am so fucking happy that we hiked up here to see this.
Yeah. Isn't that?
I'm like, it's funny how that works where you're like, yeah, whatever. It's a sunset.
But, yeah.
You know, you look around, it's unbelievable. Like what's around you. If you, you know, give it a minute to take it in.
Yeah. And you make yourself real small.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Right. Like I mean, I'd love to have that experience. I don't know that I ever will, but I certainly do. Appreciate the little details that happen around you that we all ignore constantly, you know, and when you take a moment to sort of,
I think you might see that with you, 'cause you were sailing, right?
Yeah, I was an avid sailor for years.
Like you see the stuff over the water where it's nothing but sun coming up or sun going down or the stars.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's amazing.
I was 400 or 500 miles off the coast of,
that's insane.
Of the Atlantic, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean at midnight. And you were in Nepal so you saw what the sky looks like.
Oh, yeah.
When there's no light.
Yeah, I remember seeing.
It's a different experience than I think most people can appreciate living, even in more country rural areas. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of light pollution, but when you're out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean or you're on the top of Mount Everest, there's nothing blocking the light that comes out of the heavens, and it's incredible.
I think because I've been to Iceland, that was probably one of the most amazing.
That's one of my bucket lists.
Yeah, I'm
doing it for sure. Yeah,
that's in the book too. No bucket list, just a list.
Yeah, just a list.
Because a bucket list makes it like, oh, it's unattainable. Like,
you're right.
Just put it on the list.
Just put it on a list.
But Iceland was great. Nepal was amazing. What was the other one? Above the Grand Canyon.
Yeah,
that was very cool. And then Iraq. Like, actually, Iraq was. I remember seeing satellites.
Yeah.
Because it's not a plane. It's not blank. It's just kind of moving.
Right.
And then you could see the Milky Way. It's like.
Yeah.
All right. There was some cool parts about sleeping on a truck every night.
Yeah.
When there wasn't the tracer rounds from the AKs.
Sort of like satellites.
Yeah.
But the Milky Way. I was lucky enough to see the Milky Way. I was in Arizona years ago. I just drove around the country with me and my dog, and we saw the Milky Way. And
it's insane.
First time I ever saw it, I'm like, that's not real.
Yeah.
That's. You know, you see it in like time-lapse videos and things, and you're like, that's got to be enhanced. And then you see it and you're just like, that's up there.
Yeah.
We're swimming around in the middle of that thing.
It's wild.
It's just wild.
We had a professional photographer come. It was a veteran group that went. And his picture, like the naked eye, we could see amazing pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But then the resolution or whatever would make it a little more green of that aurora kind of Iceland sky.
Yeah.
So it was more vibrant in the pictures because it was able to capture all that light.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we're all standing there freezing cold looking up like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, so awesome.
And then you find out that you didn't need to go to Iceland. They had
the
Northern Lights in Stirling about a month ago.
But. I remember we saw it at our house. We missed it one night, but then it was the next night or a week later. We saw it again.
Yeah.
Like in Leicester. I was like, what?
Yeah. No, but it's very rare, obviously. Yeah. But and then the satellites was a couple of years ago. Elon Musk, what's it called? Starlink.
Yeah.
And it looks like a train in the sky, and it comes up over the horizon, and you can watch it for like 15 minutes.
I'm pretty sure I saw it because I was out in my hot tub.
Yeah.
And I told, I'm like, Kelly, come out because I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're by the airport, and I always see the planes coming in. And then I'm always looking, you know, for UFOs. And so I see this one go by, and then I see this other one trailing. So I time it. From like where a tree is to the edge of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one came. I'm like, it's the same distance away.
Yeah.
And then it happened like 5 times. Then I went and got her. It happened like 3 more times and it stopped.
Yeah.
So like that must have been, I didn't know it was.
It had to be,
Because it was literally, like you said, a train.
Yeah, they're spaced.
It probably took like 10 minutes to
evenly apart, and they just keep coming and coming and coming. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know,
that's awesome.
That's going on right above our heads all the time. The internet that I use, I have the Starlink.
Oh, really?
Thing. It's good. I'm not promoting it, but it's great. It works perfectly.
Nice.
And, So, all right. So you're up on Everest, and what's the highest altitude that you reached?
So we went to base camp, which is 16,000 to 17,000 feet.
Wow.
And then when we went to Gokyo Ri, which I think that was 17,800. But this last hike, this was the last part that we were going to. Then we were going to like head back.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we're in this little village. There was this beautiful turquoise lake. There was this glacial slide that looked like an enormous comet came down. You know, it's part of the glacier there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could see Everest and Amada Blan and Lhotse and all these other peaks. And they said it's going to take you 3 hours to hike up that. So we just had our day pack. And
3 hours to hike up?
To hike up to the top of Gokyo Ri.
Yeah, okay.
So then I'm hiking up and I was dying. Like toe to heel, head down. I'm just like, just keep moving. And I stopped. And I knew I was about halfway up.
Mm.
And I looked up, and I got a great picture of it. It's this black mountain. And behind it, you could see that exact silhouette of Everest.
Wow.
So I go, is this the last picture I want to have of my trip?
Mm-hmm.
Or I could keep going, or I could turn around. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to keep going. So then I hiked to the top, and it was the most amazing views
yeah.
I've ever seen. Like, I put it, like, I still look at it on my phone constantly, and I have it on my desktop at work. And on the big picture, I'm like, this looks amazing.
Yeah.
But I ended up going to the highest point and took a ton of pictures. And then the funny thing about hiking is anytime I'm riding up a big hill or hiking up a mountain or something, it is the biggest struggle ever to get up to the top. But as soon as you get to the top, you're like, wait, the hard part's done.
Yeah.
Now all I got to do is go down.
Yeah.
And we made it. We did like 14 days. We actually made it a day early back to Lukla, and then we flew to back to Kathmandu and party for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Because like, you don't want to drink when you're hiking or anything.
No.
Because it's you, at the altitude, you'll just get sick really quick.
Mm-hmm.
But which was amazing was every village. Now, again, everything is walked in by locals. There was a pool table at every village. So those guys carrying those granite slabs, I'm like, how? I'm like,
yeah.
It's amazing to me that I get videos of guys carrying 4x8 sheets of plywood, like stacks of it.
Yeah.
And the way they carry it is they hunch over on like a 45 degree angle. Mm-hmm. And the weight is on the back of their hips. It's not like us on our shoulders.
Yeah.
And these guys are smoking cigarettes and they just keep moving and they're wearing like broken sandals and Crocs. It's insane.
Well, I know you had mentioned UFOs, which I'm a big fan of. I think they're probably closer than we think, but we'll do another podcast about that. But this idea that, you know, things can't be done, you know, like people are all like, how do they build the pyramids?
Oh, yeah.
That's how they did it.
Oh, yeah.
Like we're a species of people that have become weaker and weaker and less efficient. Where every other animal species seems to like evolve and become better, you know, physically anyway, and we're becoming worse and worse. And then, you know, again, that's a whole other topic. But yeah, when you watch National Geographic or, you know, because we live in the United States. We live in a place where things are easy.
Yeah.
And then you think, look, well, how did they build Machu Picchu? Or how did these guys get 4x8 sheets of plywood, you know, half dozen sheets up to, they put it on their backs and they carry it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you think, well, no one could do that. Well, no, human beings have done that forever.
Very,
it's humbling, right?
I feel like the human mind is always like seeking something better, building better things. Like we're creative. We're not, you know, you're always going to like your paintings. You're going to always keep adding stuff to make it better.
Yeah.
And like, we're just not satisfied with one thing. We got to keep.
It's a beautiful thing. Isn't
yeah.
It? Yeah. It yeah. really is. I mean, I really want you to write another book.
Yeah.
Because you're a very talented writer. I read this book and I thought, hot damn, like you had an editor, I imagine, maybe. But.
Yeah. So I wrote the book and then I was trying to find a company, and a lot of people just want your money.
Mm-hmm.
And then AC and Tracy, they were like, oh, I know a ghostwriter. Basically, I sent him what I wrote, which was easy.
Yeah.
And it was perfect because those are like still my words.
Yeah.
You just kind of like cleaned it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we had three phone calls to edit the whole book.
Yeah.
I go, three paragraphs down. I go, change this. I go, this doesn't sound right.
Or, mm-hmm.
You know, because he's not a cop and like the terminology we use and stuff, or he would add something a little to make it, you know, I'm no wordsmith, but talking to him, he's done so many books. Dennis Manesse, he did like Run DMC's book. He did a children's book that was number one for 2 weeks, TT's Adventures, that was on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like he just did another child. He does like 8 books a year.
I read that book.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
So, but no, he's so good with like getting that information out there. And he has his style, which is perfect.
Yeah.
And we meshed perfectly. His son is in the Army. His daughter's in oncology. Yeah. So like, he was like, yeah, I want to help you write this.
Yeah.
And we had so much fun doing it. It was like effortless.
Now, let me ask you a question. Has anyone made an audiobook out of this yet?
No, but I was looking into, well, I need to look at, I heard, excuse me, I heard that if you have a Spotify account, then you could do an audiobook,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Which I would like to do. And everyone's like, if you do it, you have to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't mind doing that. I think that'd be great mm-hmm. because again, I don't read a lot of books. I have read books when I was down and out in the hospital.
Sure.
But when I drive around, I've listened to over 20 books in the past 2 years of that I love.
Yeah.
Because I have kids. I was coaching my son's football. Like, life is busy.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm in the car for a half an hour or an hour or 10 hours a week,
yeah.
I get 10 hours of a book that I wanted to listen to.
Yeah.
And I don't claim like, yeah, I read that. I'm like, no, I listened to it. Yeah, I cheated.
Yeah, but I mean, sure, I get it. I was an avid reader you can see my bookshelf and everything. But I was, I used to love to read. And I'm not going to lie. Reading makes me really sleepy.
Yeah. So yeah, it's tough.
I tend to like to listen to books now, which is perfectly fine. As long as there's... again, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but I hope that the written, the printed word never goes away, that would be an awful thing. But literature is literature. You're still listening to the language. You're listening to the cadence. You're listening to, I don't know what books you listen to, but go back and listen to some of the classics, and because language is so rich and beautiful, and I got to tell you, and I'm not just saying this, do not sell yourself short that you were a poor student or something. I was too.
Yeah.
I consider myself fairly literate, but I did not excel in a lot of other ways in school, so we share that in common. But you're not a dumb guy you can be smart, and I think smart and intelligent are two different things.
Yeah.
And you're a very, very intelligent person. You clearly are, and that takes you way further than being quote-unquote smart.
Yeah, it takes me a lot. Like, that's why I strived in the military. It's like, I could read 5 chapters on how to take apart a rifle and put it back together.
Yeah.
And it would take me 100 days to do it. But if you put it in my hands and you're like, do this,
exactly.
The repetition of it.
Exactly.
And not only that, but having taken classes that I needed to take, was uninterested.
Yeah.
We actually had a criminal justice class my senior year of high school, and I loved it.
Yeah.
One, it was my defensive coach for football, Coach Rigo.
Yeah.
But I was like, I want to be a cop. This is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up getting my master's degree like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And, because of financially, you get paid more if you have your degree.
Sure.
And the Army paid for my degree. So I'm like, I'm stupid not to go to school.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it because it was all not stuff I knew, but it was police related stuff.
Yeah. It was things that interested you.
We're dealing with, and what I got out of my master's degree is, people with impulsive personalities, people with traumatic childhoods, like, tend to be our common, like, frequent flyers because they haven't dealt with trauma in those certain ways. And there's a lot behind that.
Yeah, sure is. When I first started doing this this show, I would sort of make a list, and have it in front of me, and, I wanted to sound professional and all that. But we're just sitting here having a conversation, drinking coffee and hanging out, but I realized pretty quickly that even though I have certain talking points or questions that I want to ask, I really want my guest to steer the ship. You know, I'm just here to make sure the engine is gassed up and you're telling your story, And yours is such a incredible story. I mean, and I don't mean that just because we're friends and we know
this is a lot to it.
There's so much to it, And so let me ask you now, how is your health currently? I know you said you, before we began.
Yeah.
And I want to circle back. I think asking you about your health is something that I won't forget, but I want to bring this up right now because we were talking about, like, you're a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And we were in my music studio before we began, and I've got the piano there, and you start plinking away, and you're playing a song that you wrote in your head on the piano. And so let's talk about that a little bit, because clearly I'm a musician and I love music, and I was really impressed by that. So how'd that happen? Like, what was that about?
So
you play the piano.
Yeah. Well, in high school, we had the keyboard with the notes on it, and I remember just like plinking away at the piano. Like, my sister had the piano, we'd always play it, and it was funny because other kids would come over, and some people would crush it and other people wouldn't.
Yeah.
And then it's funny, fast forward to when I was like living on Lake Ave, in my 20s, my sister had a drum set and she couldn't keep it, right? So it was in my basement. And then we'd go out.
She couldn't keep
drinks.
The drum set.
She couldn't keep it at her house or whatever
because
reason.
Because it peed on the floor?
Yeah, whatever. Whatever reason, I ended up with the drum set. Yeah. And I would mess around and I'm always tapping and I feel like I have a beat. But I'd like go out drinking with friends or like army buddies or people from Worcester. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I'd hear somebody jamming in the basement. I'm like, that's hilarious. Like somebody just knows how to play. Like you never know.
Yeah.
And fast forward to June of this year, we picked our kids up from school. We flew to Ireland, me and my wife, my two kids, my mother-in-law and her sister. Mm-hmm. And we stayed in an Airbnb and they had this beautiful piano. And my daughter is very creative and she is a steel trap. I take her to jujitsu. She'll, instead of playing on the phone, she'll watch all the moves. Mm-hmm. And I'll show her something and she'll do it. And then she'll draw something and she'll be like, Dada, I love, like, you're so good at drawing. And it's just, you know, like I feel like when you stop drawing as a kid, that's where you pick up as an adult. It's like the same stuff.
Yeah.
But she does some amazing drawings.
Yeah.
And she has that creative mindset. And that's how me and her blend really well. Mm-hmm. So she's playing the piano and she's kind of, you know, hitting the keys.
Yeah.
And then I remember like one note just from remembering it from high school, mm-hmm. like a couple notes at a time, nothing crazy. So then we're both playing it. And then we go home and I look at all these like free pianos on Marketplace. Mm. So I'm like, let's go pick up a piano. And my daughter does gymnastics. My son plays football. And I'm like, this will just be a thing to get going. So I get this like free piano in the basement and we have a brand new house, 3 years old, walkout basement, but basements are scary. So my daughter never chooses to go down. Like I got it for her so she would play because I think if it was in the living room, she'd probably play it.
How old is your daughter?
She's 11.
Okay. Yeah.
But like, you know, she wants an audience, like watch me do gymnastics, watch me play the piano. Mm-hmm. So then I got it and then I would go on Instagram and I would find, I forget who I follow, but it was impress your friends with this note from piano. And then it would show a few, I don't even know if they were chords or a couple mm-hmm. of keystrokes.
Sure.
And then, so I would do that with my right hand until I would memorize it. And then I would replay it and it'd be like, all right, then I'll do this with your left hand. Mm-hmm. So then I started playing with my left hand. So then I started doing, what was that one? One of the sci-fi movies, very simple chord I was doing at the end with Matthew McConaughey. Interstellar.
Interstellar, yeah.
So I like learned that in the basic version of it.
Sure.
And then I learned this other one where it was like left hand was like A and A at the same time. And then you start basically 1 through 4 or 5 on your right hand.
Yeah.
So I started memorizing that. And then I started playing with it. And I'm like, oh, let me do reverse. So that was like the song that I kind of, well, the tune that I made up myself. I was like, oh, this actually sounds pretty cool.
It was. When you started playing it, I mean, it was familiar to me, but then you said, this is my own little composition. And I thought, damn, I'm going to steal that.
Yeah.
It was good.
The piano's funny because it's, anytime, I feel like it's easier to go, when you tap your fingers, you go like, start with your pinky and work your way in. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a natural one. And then there's other ones where you're working from your pointer out and it seems a little more awkward when you're doing those keys. But yeah, so it's fun to like pick that up and you know, have a tune going.
Yeah. So how often do you, I mean, is it something that you just look forward to doing now? Like, you know, when you go home and you're like, you're bored or you relieve stress or whatever, you just go down and just start plinking
away.
Yeah.
So we have, our basement's finished. So we have like kind of the TV room. My son has his like mini basketball hoop, but I go walk out of the back cause we have a sauna and cold plunge.
Yeah.
So if I'm like waiting for my wife to come down or something, I'll just like start picking away at the piano.
Yeah.
And then I'll save stuff on my Instagram and then I'll go to piano and then pick one and be like, oh, this one's easy. And then I'll start to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the ones I like memorized that are, yeah. I could just play one and then go into another one, then go into the other one.
But what you'll find, you know, if you're memorizing popular songs and things, you'll come to realize very quickly, everything's like a pattern.
Yeah.
And it's not, it just becomes easier each time. And then you'll recognize like, wait a minute, this completely different song sounds similar to this one. It's in a different key maybe, but the patterns tend to be the same.
Yeah.
And, I'm very impressed by that. I'm excited. We should form a band.
I know. piano sounds like a good piano sounds good. Like my piano is like jacked up.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. If you bought it used on Facebook, it's definitely jacked up.
It's like one key goes down halfway, so you got to jam it.
Yeah.
But then I remember the piano we were playing in Ireland sounded like amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, I wish I, you know, and your keyboard sounds great.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, you should, I mean, those aren't, I mean, they're cheap.
Yeah.
You know, a couple, $300-$500 or something. You can get a decent.
But it's fun to, you know, get down and play. And,
yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, Christmas is coming. Learn some like Christmas tunes real quick.
It's great. You become the life of the party.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. I remember my daughter's doing gymnastics and I'm doing that tune and my wife and my mother-in-law are like kind of dancing to it. It's just like the same repetitive thing. I'm like, hey, whatever.
So what's the plan for the future? What do you got?
Short-term plan. Let's see. Try to get into some more public speaking, like professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have a call tomorrow with somebody that I've been working with where I can travel the country and they would say, all right, here's our client. You're going to fly here. You're going to speak to them half hour, 45 minutes or an hour and then fly home and then get paid for services.
Yeah.
And because I've realized when I wrote the book, I'm like, this is cool. But then when I started signing the books for people that are like battling cancer, I was like, holy shit. Like this is what I was meant to do.
Yeah.
Like I like being a soldier. I like being a cop. But I love sharing my story because I'm not going to say I'm a motivational person. I'm not going to say I'm a motivational speaker because I think any actor can give those key words and give a motivational speech.
Yeah.
But if my story motivates you, then I'll tell it every day, especially if it's going to help somebody.
I'm not being schmutzy here, but I'd much rather listen to a motivational person than a motivational speaker. And you motivate people. You know, I told you a little while ago, like how can I quit this or that when I think of what JD has gone through and what you continue to do. And, I think I was, before we got distracted by the piano, I was asking you, you know, how's your health right now?
Yeah. So, everyone's like, oh, you look so good. And I'm like, yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. But, and when people know you have cancer, they want to ask how you are and they kind of want to hear you're doing good.
Because
you look, you know, you could look good or you might not look good. Meaning like, you know, I could see, I remember seeing somebody recently with cancer and I'm like, they have a lot of chemo and like they were stage four. So with me, I'm like, you know, I appreciate it, but that's why I work out a lot so I can stay fit. So I'm not in that hospital bed.
Yeah.
But at night I've had a lot of different chemo medications and I'm on my fourth generation medication and I've had what I thought was like, could be sciatic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out it was like my hips not aligned, but I mean, I'm not sleeping at night. I'm taking like 2000 milligrams of Tylenol at night so I could go to bed and wake up at 1 a.m. in pain and then sit in the shower for 45 minutes until the pain goes away or turn the sauna on, which I got to wait an hour. And then I'll try and like sleep in my sauna at 150 degrees, 180 degrees. And so this is the point where I emailed my oncologist yesterday saying I'm done taking chemo.
Mm-hmm.
because if this is causing my leg pain, because it does say this chemo causes extremity pain.
Yeah.
So I'm being my own advocate and saying, let me stop chemo for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If my leg pain goes away, then it could be because of the chemo.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, then my cancer numbers are going to increase, which is dangerous. So I'll get back on that medication or another medication.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always these little, like I said, obstacles that are.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't have leg pain, I'd be doing great.
Yeah. But, you had told me earlier, but forgive me, the current condition is like a chronic leukemia.
Yeah, CML. Yeah. So there's chronic myelogic leukemia.
Yeah. My dad actually suffered from that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It didn't take him, but.
Yeah, it's a very, they say very rare, very treatable with medication.
Yeah.
So I could take medications and it could get my numbers, my Philadelphia gene or BCR-ABL, like cancer number, to below, I think it's 0.01, then I could come off of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been at like 1.2, 2 point whatever. Or
yeah.
I haven't been low enough to come off, which means I have to take it, keep taking it.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers really show 8 months of taking this, you should, you know, and I'm like, I just think I'm my DNA makeup or whatever. I'm not that person that's taking it. You know, I'm hopeful. I wish it would.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the reality is if I've been taking it for a year and a half and it says typical is 8 months and that number, you know, then you're in true remission.
Yeah.
Oncologist, he's like, yeah, you're in remission. I go, I'm not in remission if I'm taking chemo every day.
Yeah.
Like, because if I stop taking it, then that number is going to climb.
Yeah.
So, and I was researching myself, which I don't know, you know, take it with a grain of salt, that my next option might be a bone marrow transplant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how true that is. So I got to, actually, I noticed I missed a call from the doctor from the email. So now I'm going to call and I got to go next week anyways for blood work. So my question to my doctor would I be a recipient for a bone marrow transplant?
Mm-hmm.
And for a chronic leukemia, it has like a 95% success rate.
Oh.
So.
Well, let's hope for that, then.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to not take medication ever again.
Yeah.
The good thing about, you know, also looking good, I was prescribed testosterone after the testicular cancer surgery. Uh-huh. So I've been on testosterone since 2012, which I think helps keep my energy levels up.
Yeah.
Keep the strength up because the fatigue that's caused by the medications and stuff.
Right, right.
And I mean, if you're a male over 30, I would say try and get testosterone. Or even if you're a woman, try to get hormone replacement therapy.
Mm-hmm.
For the older generation, it sounds like a taboo thing.
Yeah.
But it's very, like my dad started taking testosterone. I go, how do you feel? He goes, I feel amazing.
Yeah.
I'm like, awesome. Everyone should feel awesome.
Yeah,
you shouldn't let it, you know, oh, I'm getting old. Like, that's what doctors like to say is,
yeah.
Oh, you're getting old. You're going to be tired when you get home from work.
Like, yeah.
Well, why don't I not be tired and enjoy my family time?
I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm tired by 8:30.
Yeah. And,
in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're working with this company, No Limits Medical, where you pay a fee every month and they give a discount for police officers, and they give a Thin Blue Ride discount, like 10%, where you could get peptides.
Yeah.
And I love peptides now because they're the most anti-inflammatory, which inflammation causes so many problems.
Yeah.
It helps with muscle tendon repair. It's so many benefits to these little things that you could do.
Yeah.
I think it's worth people looking into.
Yeah. So this has been awesome. One of my favorite conversations I've had with anyone. Why don't you go ahead and very quickly just sort of tell people how they can reach you through the Thin Blue Ride organization,
yeah.
How they can find your book again.
Yep.
And then I'm going to kick you right the
hell out. I'm going to go feed the kids. So thinblueride.org is the nonprofit website where we raise money for cops, veterans, first responders, and kids. And we have an events page on there, and we have some apparel on there. We do have more apparel. We're just going to add it to the site. You know, that's where we get our capital, is selling t-shirts and all that. And Resilience Talks, not Brazilian Stocks. Wanted to come up with a name for the LLC, so ResilienceTalks.com.
ResilienceTalks.com.
Yep. And that has So I wanted to separate the book from the nonprofit stuff because I financially put, you know, did that myself. I didn't want to take from the nonprofit.
Yeah.
So that has the book on there. It has some t-shirts of me doing the headstand. Mm-hmm. And on the back, I usually sign the books. If you order from Resilience Talks, I could sign the book and send it out. And usually I sign it, you know, thank you. Thank you for the support. And I always say, never stop fighting, or you're stronger than you think.
Okay.
And I think that helps a lot of people when it, you know, when you're battling something,
yeah,
that it's good to see, like, okay, yeah, I am stronger than I think.
Yep.
Physically and mentally.
Yep. And that's the book again is, Sergeant Jonathan Daige. The book is called Beyond Survival: What Comes After the Fight.
Yes.
Choosing to Thrive. And it's a wonderful book. It's a really easy read. And you can get this on Amazon.
Yes, it's on Amazon. And if you like it, leave a review because that helps the ratings.
Yeah.
The hardcover has some colored pictures from Everest and some police and all that. The paperbacks are black and white, so that's the only difference.
Okay. And if they went to resiliencetalks.com, yeah.
Yes.
They can find the book there as well?
Yes. Yeah, we could send it out.
And I don't want to commit you to anything, but if they went to that website...
Yeah. And that's a little better for me if they go to that site.
Okay. Well, then go there for sure. And if they wanted a hardcover book, would you sign it?
Yeah, I could sign the paperback or a hardcover.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I don't know if there's a section for the notes, but if somebody purchases it, I'll sign it anyways with whoever purchase.
Yeah.
Or they can send an email. I think it's at JD at Resilience Talks.
Well, because you gave me this book, and I'm going to read the inscription that you said. It says, to Tom, you still owe me $20. I'm kidding. I'll give you $20.
Yeah.
No, but thank you so much, JD. John Daige, this has been... I'm not even joking, and I don't want to insult my other guests from the past, but this has just been one of the best conversations I think I've had in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So,
awesome.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Oh, also.
No, we're done here.
Oh, we're done.
No, I'm kidding.
Sorry. So that was the websites, and then on Instagram, Thin Blue Ride. And or Jonathan Daige, and then Facebook, we have our stuff on there as well.
And it's Daige.
Correct.
Yeah, yep. We should make sure people know that.
JonathanDaige. Perfect.
Perfect.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you so
much. That was great. You've covered a lot. I thought we were going to go Joe Rogan there for a minute.
How'd I do?
Oh, that was awesome.
Thanks for joining me in part two of an interview with John Daige. You've been listening to Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Please remember, we would love to hear from you. Are there any local musicians or artists that you'd like to hear from? Call or email us with any suggestions or general feedback. Call us at 508-797-1117 or email us at info@audiojournal.org. And before I leave, as always, I'd just like to say I'm grateful for the universe and for whatever put us all here. And I'm grateful for all the gifts that it's given me. And I'm grateful for you for being with me here today. Have a great day and thanks for listening. Would you like to hear news from Charlton, Southbridge, and Sturbridge that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Wednesday at 5 p.m.